This podcast is a production of Open Pediatrics, an open access online community of healthcare professionals sharing best practices from around the world. Visit openpediatrics.org for more.
Hello and welcome to the World Shared Practice Forum. I'm Tracy Walbrinka, pediatric intensivist at Boston Children's Hospital and co-director of Open Pediatrics. And I'm super excited to be here today by the leading PICU podcasters in the field right now. And we are going to be doing a very meta podcast, a podcast on podcasts. So I have a lot of people that are joining today, and I'm just going to go around the room and have each person introduce themselves and what podcast they're representing. Greg, do you want to go first?
Yeah, hi, my name is Greg Kelly. I'm a pediatric intensivist at Children's Hospital Westmead in Sydney, Australia, and I'm one of the people who run the Pediatric or Intensive podcast.
So hi, thanks so much for having us here. My name is Peter Alexander. I'm a pediatric cardiologist and intensive care physician at Boston Children's Hospital, where I'm also the medical director for ECMO. The podcast that I am here representing is actually Greg Kelly's Pediatric or Intensiva. He was fantastic and got that organized very early in the pandemic, and I've been delighted to contribute ever since.
Hi, I'm Alice Shanklin. I'm finishing my critical care fellowship this year at Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., and I'm proud to do Peds Crit with Zach Hodges.
Yeah, hi, I'm Patrick Davies. I'm a consultant in pediatric intensive care in Nottingham, UK, and I'm half of the PICPOD podcast with my colleague Harish Vias.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Mack. I'm a pediatric intensivist at MUSC in Charleston, South Carolina, and I am one of several hosts for the SCCM podcast, which is formerly known as the iCritical Care podcast.
Hi, I'm Erin Bennett. I'm a peds intensivist at Arkansas Children's Hospital in Little Rock, Arkansas. And I narrate the abstracts for Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Journal, also known as the audio summaries, under Society of Critical Care Medicine.
Hey, everyone. I'm Zach Hodges. I'm a third-year critical care fellow at UT Southwestern in Dallas. And along with Alice, we produce the Peds Crit podcast.
My name is Rahul Demania. I'm a pediatric intensivist at Cleveland Clinic Children's, and I am representing PICU Doc on Call.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all. This is such a powerhouse. I'm excited to just maybe even start. What is the hype about podcasts? Should we listen? Why? Maybe Zach, if I can kick this off to you, what's the value?
Yeah, I'm happy to get right into that. You know, it is a meta discussion, and you know, our listeners today, they probably know what a podcast is, but it might be helpful to define that. So a podcast is a series or individual audio recordings that are designed to be consumed asynchronously through smartphone applications. And you know, these podcasts are able to be edited by producers, and they leverage social media to be shared, and they can be accessed on mobile devices and revisited by learners. You know, what we're discussing today, a pediatric critical care medicine podcast, you know, what is that? So I think of that generally as being an individual program that creates podcast episodes designed for pediatric critical care clinicians. And it can be used for a number of things, and this is really where we get the value. So it can be used to teach medical knowledge and board review recent literature, or discuss concepts that otherwise inform clinical practice or professional development.
Wonderful. Thank you. Erin, do you want to jump in? Do you have anything else? You do a kind of different style of podcast. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that for the podcasts that I do and other ones that, you know, like Elizabeth does this as well, when we talk about articles and the latest research in critical care, it makes it really accessible so that wherever you are, any corner of the world or on your commute, you're walking or driving, anywhere it's accessible that you can just with the click of a button be able to listen to the latest research. You don't necessarily have to sit down with a journal, even though that is nice, but be able to do it on your walk or your drive and listen to anything anywhere in the world so that you're caught up to date and you can get in touch with your colleagues doing the research as well.
And, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, I think we are all those that really believe in podcasts. There are some that say, you know, podcasts, if you're doing walking or doing chores, that you can be distracted. So I'm curious, what do you all think the evidence is out there? What can we share with our audience about the evidence for podcasts and true learning?
Well, I think one thing we have a huge amount of evidence of is the knowledge translation gap. So the, you know, we produce more and more basic and clinical research each year, but actually that gap between the research being produced and that finding its way into frontline clinical practice, if anything, has lengthened and, you know, is now in the order of 15 to 17 years. So any effort to focus on that gap between what the knowledge is and how it gets into people's ears and into their hands and into the bed space. I think that's really the role of podcasting. I think it's an unhelpful setup to counter it to academic research, because we still clearly need traditional academic research. But the question for me is, and one of the reasons we started Pediatrica Intensiva, is what can go in the gap between that and the bed space?
Yeah, and I think you bring up such an important point. And I think that we saw the incredible value of podcasts during the COVID pandemic and the ability to quickly share information in a way that, you know, we weren't able to publish those sort of academic reports and manuscripts. And so I think, you know, you're touching on such an important point about the value of podcasts, Greg. So thank you for adding that. And Zach, I might just go back to you for a moment. I know that you know the literature on the podcast efficacy incredibly well. I wonder if you could just share a couple highlights with us as to, you know, what's in the literature about how well they teach.
So, you know, all this kind of really got started in the emergency medicine and the adult critical care world, kind of around the 2014 when Mike Cadogan et al. First published the rapid onset and use of these medical education podcasts. And in 2014, there was a survey by Mallon et al. And Bernstein in 2021 that really showed that the majority of emergency medicine and emergency medicine residents are using these resources, these medical education podcasts, to supplement their learning. And then Little in 2020, through a survey, showed that podcasts have spread really to all medical specialties, including pediatrics and, of course, pediatric critical care. I think the field really is trying to define, you know, how do we know these podcasts are effective in teaching the knowledge that we want our learners to know? You know, you've even touched on already, you know, does exercising, how does that influence? And there have been some randomized controlled trials. I think one I was just looking up now, just reminding myself on the, you know, the effect of driving. How does that affect, you know, podcast knowledge acquisition and retention? And I think that the literature is finding that divided attention, it still can be effective for transferring knowledge, as long as what the learner is doing is not distracting to the point that it will impair. So exercising is a great example. Our learners can learn a concept through an audio podcast, but also get the benefits of exercising. Maybe that's chores around your home. You know, as long as there's not a threshold that's distracting to the learner, they can still find efficacy from these podcasts. And I think it might be a value to describe what Riddle et al. In 2020 found the three core components of the efficacy of the benefits of medical education podcasts. That was one for opportunity for personalized learning, second for opportunistic engagement, and then community formation. So what I see for personalized learning is that these residents and trainees and really clinicians attending physicians can broaden their scope to find international experts through these medical education podcasts to fill a knowledge gap that they define for themselves. It's completely in line with adult learning theory. And then these resources, as we've already mentioned, they're easily accessible on their mobile devices, and they can be consumed whenever convenient for the learner. And this can be during times that are not traditionally available for learning. So we already mentioned commuting, your exercises, et cetera. And because the learners can control when they listen to these things, it creates a low stress learning environment. And then something that I think needs to get even more attention is the community formation. So like these resources are able to be shared locally and discussed at your local conferences, but also shared, you know, via social media. And there's even opportunities for the learners to interact with the authors. And all of this can go on to create what's called a virtual community of practice, where you have learners, you have educators in virtual space, but also locally sharing knowledge with one another and continuing to add to the knowledge that's being able to be first learned and then also shared with others.
Amazing. Thank you. I think you are definitely hopefully convincing some of the people that are out there listening that podcasts are worthwhile. And now maybe we can dive in and sort of talk a bit about what are some of the podcasts that are out there right now in Peds Critical Care Medicine and why they were started and what they are hoping to sort of cover. Maybe Greg and Peta, can I ask you both to kick it off?
Yeah, so we talked about this a lot before we started it. And the two things that we were really trying to address were, one, the knowledge translation gap, which I spoke about earlier. And that was a personal frustration of reading about things and being like, well, why aren't we doing that? And then realizing that there's such a huge space between you should do the thing and how do you do the thing in practice at your place with your resources? And so that was kind of flipping it around of like talking about the real details and the nuts and bolts and who the surgeon is and how the relationship is. Like that is how stuff gets implemented, not just this is a new operation. And so talking about those real local details, which I always thought was not that helpful, actually is really helpful, and realizing why things are different at each place. So that was really one thing. And then the other thing was, again, a personal thing, this idea of developing expertise rather than competence. And as I said in the planning chat, you know, we have all these mechanisms to ensure competence. You know, you get certified by your medical school or, you know, the state medical board or whatever saying you're a competent practitioner. And no one that I know wants to just be a competent practitioner. People want to be good, but there's very little effort or resources put into taking people. We sort of all go on our personal journeys. And so it was the idea of a personal journey for me, like how do I move towards excellence, and also helping our listeners. So we deliberately targeted our podcast at more experienced people. So yeah, they're the two educational objectives for us, really. And I'd be interested in asking Peter, because we were talking earlier about like where does podcast sit alongside traditional publishing, and she does a lot of that as well as the podcasting.
Great segue to me. Thank you. I was going to step back and go in the other direction, actually, and just give a little bit more context to how we ended up doing a podcast. Because Greg's right, we did talk about it for a long time. But part of what precipitated it was that Greg and I studied together for our final ICU exams. And in Australia, that's a big deal. With 15 months, I think Greg had us studying for to actually hit the ground running for the exams. And so we worked together a lot in that last stage of training. And then I moved overseas and Greg moved, and we've moved all over. But we spent a number of years meeting up somewhere for a conference. And what we enjoyed as much as we'd enjoyed learning during actual kind of that end of fellowship period was unpacking the stuff that you hear about at the conference, unpacking the research to talk about how you could actually make that work in your own center. And so when he first called me to pitch this idea of this fantastic podcast that he had in mind, what he kept saying was, it's going to be like being at the bar after the conference where we actually talk about how you can make this stuff come to life in your environment. And that's, I think that's probably still a lot how our podcast sounds, because it is taking some pretty high level constructs and concepts and breaking down the systems that they live in to then talk about how you can implement some aspects of hopefully evidence-based, maybe experience-based learning, and bring that through to our own practice in other places. So I haven't deliberately avoided your question, Greg, although it always feels a little bit exaggerated when you talk about how much I publish. I don't feel like a very important scientist. But actually, I think part of that crossover for us was being able to invite really clear thinkers about aspects of clinical practice that I don't feel particularly expert in to come and join us to have a discussion about their passion expertise area, and being able to just reach out to people that I knew from working with them in other projects, as well as from publishing some consensus things with them. It's been really neat to be able to tap into an extended network, really enthusiastic, experienced professionals, to be able to get them to talk about their area of passion and bring it to life in a different way. And one of those that really made a difference for me was talking to Dr. Traub at, help me, Greg.
Weill Cornell.
At Weill Cornell, about the delirium assessment tool, because she talks about delirium the way I think about left atrial hypertension. You know, I've got an algorithm in my head and I know how I'm going to start treating it, and I know when I'm going to trigger different constructs in my mind. And to have her talk about delirium, which I'm not going to lie, seen as a little bit wishy-washy before that, really changed my perspective about how we can look at any construct in medicine, because there is somebody out there who's got a really thoughtful way of approaching it. And that's kind of how we really aimed to bring people through our podcast. Not that I'm going to be the expert in everything, but that we're going to find a pretty cool expert to help us think about this better moving forward.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing the story about Pediatrica Intensiva. And I think, Patrick, it sounds quite similar to the philosophy that you've started. I wonder if you want to talk to us a little bit about PICPOD and sort of your inspiration for starting that podcast.
Thank you, Tracy. There's so much overlap. I was so fascinated to hear what Peter and Greg, and that you were saying it's like being at the bar in a conference. So our philosophy was similar, but slightly different. We said it'd be like post-war drowned coffee room conversation. Yeah, and we started ours when my colleague, Harish Lias, who he's forgotten more than any of us have ever known. And he was retiring, which was a tragedy for global medicine. And I thought, you know, I just love speaking to this guy and just tapping his knowledge. So how can I carry on doing that? What would give me an excuse to keep on doing that? So I said, Harish, let's do a podcast. And he said, what's a podcast? So we recorded, and the first few are just, you know, the sound quality is terrible and it just doesn't work right. But eventually we learned. And as you guys said, you know, the ability to approach experts and say, we're doing a podcast, will you talk to us? It's just extraordinary. And people say, yes, it's amazing. And since then, we've just carried on and we just love doing it. You know, we do it really for ourselves and we're always staggered that other people want to listen. But people do listen, and the topics we examined. So for instance, I just actually published a couple of hours ago, I was an interview with a guy who runs a retraction watch, which was just mind-blowing, just both terrifying and uplifting at the same time. No, I'm talking about individual authors who've had 192 papers retracted and why that happens and how. Just amazing. But the ability to just speak to those people and share that knowledge, it's just fantastic. It's so inspiring to hear all those voices.
Thank you. And I, you know, sort of thinking about the theme of sharing people that are publishing, I wonder, Elizabeth, if I could turn to you and if you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about SCCM podcast, how it started. Maybe, you know, this has been going for a long time and I'm curious, you know, what, if anything, has changed in the philosophy and how you all have been evolving your podcast over time.
Yeah, thank you, Tracy. So yes, the original iCritical Care podcast, the first one was released in 2005, which I'm pretty sure I wasn't listening to podcasts in those days. We are doing something similar. We're interviewing authors to share their story. And what PETA said really resonated with me, and that is about making this very approachable, making this work human and hearing the stories behind it. And one of my favorite parts about interviewing these authors is asking them where they got the idea for the study and how they collaborated, you know, how they came up with this team of collaborators that are often, you know, across various institutions and what got them into this space. And I think that's really important for junior investigators and folks that don't necessarily see themselves as researchers or, you know, just to make this a very approachable place. And often it begins with a story. It might have been at the bar at a conference. It might have begun in training. You know, folks might have known each other from a long time ago. Really, it's about connections and how we as humans interact with each other. And then, you know, they might have faced a difficult case or something and they come up with this question. And I think for me, that's really my favorite part is sort of exposing, like, you know, stepping back in time before the study even came to fruition, before the collaborators got together, like, how did you get to that point? It's A, fascinating, but B, I think it gives people ideas about how they might, you know, come to what might be otherwise an intimidating space. And that is, you know, publishing and research in our field. So it's been a very enjoyable part of that work for me. And hopefully, you know, folks that are coming through training or early in their careers find those human stories very approachable as well.
Amazing. Thank you. And kind of, you know, building on the journal podcast theme, I'm wondering, Erin, you sort of take a different approach to your podcasts in terms of, you know, thinking about how people might be interacting with the particular content. So I wonder if you might talk a little bit about the idea, why did you get started, and sort of the philosophy that you take?
Yeah, so I got started a couple of years ago, and mostly in the beginning was for the accessibility. And honestly, it was a little bit selfish because I was like, I wish I could have a way to learn the latest research from pediatric critical care medicine without having to sit down with the journal. I mean, I love the journal, but having a little bit more of an accessible method. And so that's how I got started, at least just getting the abstracts out there for people to listen to. And then as you're listening, since PCCM reaches all different disciplines, you can hear, you know, the abstract of an article you might like and think, I want to read that. I want to go look in the journal. I want to talk to that author. I want to reach out to the person doing that research. It might be in a different corner of the world. And so, you know, just what Elizabeth was just saying about connection and reaching out to people, I thought it would be beyond just learning the abstract itself. It's also tapping into the research and furthering your own knowledge, furthering your own research and thinking, hey, I'm doing some research on that. I'm going to reach out to this person somewhere else and maybe we can collaborate. And so in the broader sense, being able to reach out to people anywhere and networking, whether it be, hey, I'm interested in your research or hey, I want to collaborate, and being able to reach out to people, network and get together and work together and disseminate knowledge to everybody. So I think that's the biggest thing that I was trying to accomplish with it and will hopefully continue to work at well into the future.
Amazing. Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, I think that's so brilliant because, I think Pediatric or Intensive probably got delayed by about 2 years by me visiting Boston and Peter introducing me to Tracy and just seeing the incredible resources that she's built and the team that she has. And it's very easy to think, oh my God, I can't do that or I don't have that. But I love that you've taken like something that you want to do, something that no one else is doing, and something that is needed, and it's niche and it just works really well. So I think it's absolutely brilliant to flip around that lack of resources. We did a similar thing because we're like, we have no time. I want Peter to be on it. She's brilliant. She has no time. So it can't be deeply researched. So therefore it needs to be just like, what do you do in practice? And we say like, because we have the best guests, like they don't have much time, but we say like, you just literally, it's just like that coffee or the bar. Like you just walk off the ward around, tell us what you do in practice. That's what we're interested in. So we flipped it around that our constraints became like what we did or our strategy.
You know, I love listening to all of you and sort of thinking about the passion and the inspiration and trying to really fill this gap and this need that was able to benefit yourself. And then there's so many others that are out there that have that same gap to fill. And, you know, I think this concept of just getting started with something is so important because I think it's really hard to sort of think about all the things that you need to do, but just getting something started builds on things and, you know, inspires others to do the same thing.
When you see the professionalism of Open Pediatrics and how well it's run and the resources and the tech, it's easy to be put off a bit. But actually, there are some very amateur podcasts out there like ours, where all we have is some free software, two microphones, a couple of laptops, and that's it. And you don't need to have a huge amount of resources. You can just do it yourself with the minimal resources and just enthusiasm and passion, and then things work.
Thank you so much. And speaking of enthusiasm and passion, I would love for Alice and Zach to talk to us a little bit about Peds Crit, because I feel that enthusiasm and passion every time I listen to your episode.
Yes, we're two very emphatic people. But Dr. Davies, to your point, I 100% agree. Give me a long weekend and I will figure it out, you know? So Zach and I want to take this back to Zach's point about the fact that, at least in emergency medicine, we know that all of those residents are listening to podcasts, right? Hugely popular. That's how they learn. That's how this group of trainees learns. Zach and I both individually had these experiences during our residencies where we absolutely loved pediatric podcasts, learning so much from them, thought we might be able to do it similarly, and made little educational projects on the side. So he did Medical College of Georgia Pediatrics podcast. I did something called Peds Admit. We taught a pre-rounding episode and it was popular with our interns, right? We, at the end of our residencies, started looking for these pediatric podcasts for pediatric critical care. And besides the fabulous podcasts that are here today, didn't find that deep well and decided that we would try and do it too. And so if you listen back to the first episode of Peds Crit, you can see episodes that we recorded, how to intubate, for example, where we're talking to these clinicians and we've honestly haven't really done this much, right? We're about to start our critical care training. And then we have these 3 years where you can hear us get a little bit more educated, a little bit more advanced, and we plan to continue. But that's sort of the story behind Peds Crit.
And I think Alice and I, we're at a level of knowledge as a first year fellow that I think really works well if you are a first year or an early trainee. And then like, we hope that as we progress and our understanding of pediatric critical care becomes a bit more nuanced and a bit more sophisticated, or the goal is that the conversation will become that as well. And we think about the community formation. It seems like it could be a big advantage for someone maybe coming early into their training. They might have a lot to learn from our earlier episodes. And, you know, as we continue to grow and develop, we think that our audience might benefit from, you know, joining us for that journey.
Yeah, and I love because, you know, you ask questions that are relevant to the trainees because you're sort of working through a lot of those yourself. And as you have gone through your career, those questions have evolved, but, you know, are still quite relevant. And, you know, I think Turning over to Rahul next to talk about medical trainees will be really important.
So Pick Your Doc on Call was started as a labor of love, and it ended up being a great accountability framework for myself as a fellow and my mentor, Dr. Pradeep Kamat, who has been truly influential in the development of the podcast. Pick Your Doc on Call soon became a fun way for us to look at the current literature and interview guests who are very experienced on the clinical realm, but also have their particular research and educational interests. And it has been great to hybrid all of these things with a lens of clinical reasoning. And I think that's what excites me the most about Pick Your Doc on Call. The target audience is very broad, but particularly anyone who is working clinically at the bedside in the acute care pediatric setting. That can be anyone from the EMT who comes and transports the critically ill child to the emergency room, as well as the frontline providers such as residents, fellows, APPs, and PICU attendings.
I guess I should probably jump in and talk about the Open Pediatrics podcast. So the World Shared Practice Forum, we started this in 2012 with a goal. Originally, it was all video. And the goal was actually to build what Zach described earlier, the community of practice. And these videos were intended to be released on a specific day. And we asked people to host a conference and jump in and answer the questions that we were asking in the videos, like, how do you manage sepsis in your institution? How do you decide on these guidelines? Does anybody have a particular way of doing X, Y, or Z? And we asked people to respond in the chat so we could see really quickly a snapshot of how the world was practicing these various topics. And it was really exciting. And then we did that for a number of years, and our learning management system changed. And then COVID happened. And throughout our entire history of the World Shared Practice Forum, we always did take out the audio recording and post that as a podcast. And because it was conversational, it sort of felt that way. And then once COVID happened and we couldn't bring our visiting professors to Boston anymore, we decided to convert fully to podcasts. And that's where we've landed since COVID. But it's been really exciting. And I think one of the themes that emerged for us as we were thinking about what the goal of this was, in addition to the community of practice, was to get with basically what PETA and Greg said, was try to get inside the mind of the expert. And, you know, these were people that were publishing, these were people that were thinking, thought leaders in different fields, but we wanted to ask them practically, what were they doing at the bedside? Because you couldn't always do exactly what the guidelines say, or, you know, there are certain challenges. And so we tried to probe them a little bit more to really kind of get behind that mindset. And so that was originally the intention, was to try to think about this for critical care people and try to go a little bit beyond the paper. Well, now that we've kind of gone through all of these podcasts and who they are, the idea behind the voices here, I'm hoping we could talk a little bit about, you know, some of the ways that people around the world are using podcasts for education, training, both for your, you know, ourselves, as well as potentially for your trainees going forward. So any thoughts about, you know, what you've heard about people using your podcasts in different ways?
Yes, we have been very grateful to be active in around 95 countries. And so far, we have accrued a little over 300,000 downloads and listens on various platforms. One of the things that we are now looking at more are, who are the people actually listening to our podcast? And so far, it's just been really humbling and anecdotal advice. So I frequently get a message from the EMS crew who are transporting our critically ill patients. And they said, hey, we played your podcast on high flow nasal cannula throughout the ambulance yesterday, and we really enjoyed it. Or I had a fellow who came up to me and said, hey, before we saw this liver patient together, on my ride into work, I actually was listening to your liver transplant and acute liver failure. So as we continue to expand, my hope is that we transition from something more anecdotal to looking at our global reach and seeing the phenotype of the listener that we are trying to reach.
I can access my global download data. And it's just extraordinary when I see a download from, you know, from Liberia or some country where you just imagine what the medical educational procedures are and facilities are. And that just gives me a massive thrill when I see that. And I think, well, you know, it's just extraordinary that we can reach these people. And I've had trainees who've approached me and said, the reason why they've gone into PICU training is because this podcast was the thing which drew them in. And that's just fantastic, isn't it? That's amazing to hear that we can reach people so clearly wherever they are.
I think it's fascinating that that you can see that people from Liberia are downloading your podcast. And I can imagine that that's really cool. But I work here in Boston Children's Hospital, which is Tracy's center as well, with, you know, enormous resources and lots of phenomenal education. And I have to say, it always shocks me when one of my cardiac anesthesia colleagues says, hey, I was listening to your podcast on, you know, such and such on the way into work. And, you know, you got this right, but man, you've got to stop saying that out loud, you know, or whatever it is. And all I can think is, oh my God, they're listening to our podcast. And it's really cool, the breadth of people, you know, that it is trainees and it is people who don't know us, but actually the people who know us also kind of listen every now and then as well, apparently.
And Peter, it is quite scary, isn't it? You know, when you're saying something online and posting it for the whole world to listen to, and you're thinking, I've just said this, and everyone will be judging me for the things I've said. And it's quite daunting sometimes, because as you said, people can approach you and say, well, I think you were a complete idiot when you said that. So every time I do this, actually, it motivates me to be better, right? Because I have to be, everything I say, I stand by. And that's quite a big thing to be thinking about when you're just talking with a microphone.
I think that's a really good point. And I think one of the things that occurred to us quite early on is that both Greg and I are fairly careful with the way we approach what we're going to say on any of the podcasts. I think we got much more careful after we recognized that people were actually listening. Whereas our co-presenter, Mike Clifford, is much more game to just say what he actually thinks all the time, which has us unpacking sometimes. But he does kind of stir things up a little bit. And having that person is really kind of fun as well, because he's happy to play devil's advocate or just say some really unpopular things at times.
I wondered if we could go back just a tiny bit to what you mentioned, Patrick, you know, in terms of, you know, the worldwide reach that we have. And, you know, I'm curious to hear about the experience of the SCCM podcasts and the audio summaries, because, you know, I think one thing that we know is not everybody can pay for PEDS critical care medicine or critical care medicine. And I think the opportunity to share that really broadly is such an important mission. And I'm curious if you could speak to us a little bit, Elizabeth and Aaron, you know, just about your reach and, you know, any sort of impact that you've heard about your podcasts directly.
I think that for me, at least, you know, Pediatric Critical Care Medicine does publish articles from all over the world. And so being able to do those articles justice and abstract justice is what I hope I'm able to do, because I think that I want to be able to get the main message of those abstracts out as the author wants those messages delivered. And so that's definitely been one of the biggest, for me, hurdles in reaching out to the authors themselves in certain instances and saying, hey, is this the message or how you want it presented? And I can certainly continue to improve upon that as it goes into the future to reach out to everybody.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. With the SCCM podcast, we have, since 2005, we've had about 500, a little over 500 episodes, and most recently, the last couple of years, about a million listens per year. So there's definitely some reach there. I think part of it is the history. I also think one thing there is that we have a number of hosts. And I tend to do a lot of the pediatric critical care ones, but not necessarily. And we just started actually right before this recording. I was just interviewing my very first non-journal article author. So we're touching our toe into, for example, the space of experienced or seasoned physicians in critical care and the importance of retaining them in that space. So I think it's important to, you know, spread your wings, pivot, get different voices, you know, and obviously, you know, when folks are interviewed or on there, whether they're co-hosting or they're the guests or what have you, they share, you know, with their friends on their social platforms, and then word spreads. So, yeah.
That's great. I wonder, you know, Alice, when I think about your podcast, you know, I'm curious, what do you think is your secret sauce? Why do people jump on and listen to Pete's Crit?
Oh, I appreciate that question so much. And I was thinking about it. So if Pediatrica Intensiva is the bar after a conference and PICPOD is coffee after rounds, I would say that Peds Crit is a consultant walking into the workroom after they've been called and really explaining everything. Why are we doing this? What's the background? What are the next steps? What did you miss when you made that first call?
We're trying to get people who are, you know, already experts in this field, in the field, already, you know, giving talks at national conferences, to sit down and have a Q&A with currently two trainees to try to explore what questions that might be shared with other trainees across the United States and really across the world too. Anything else, Alice?
No, I think that, yeah, I think we're trying to do the core topics, but then when things like the Phoenix criteria came out, we couldn't not email them immediately like journalists. You know, we are so passionate about the field, and we're planning to continue to do episodes like that.
I wonder how many podcasts the Phoenix group will be doing.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
And, you know, to go back to Greg's earlier point, I mean, it's such an amazing way to get these guidelines out there, right? So you might have read them in the journal, but you also can listen to them and then go back to the journal. And so, you know, in one aspect, I think that we probably be great to talk about is like publications and promotion and getting recognition for the work that you do. And, you know, podcasts are a wonderful way to help get the work of others and yourself out there. And I think, you know, we're responsible as PICU podcasters to help share, you know, what's the most impactful stuff that's out there, you know, in peds critical care medicine at the moment.
Yeah, I've been a bit surprised by, because I thought, well, you know, why would these people want to speak to us? But, you know, authors have trouble getting their research platformed and heard, and then even explaining or articulating it, because it's not necessarily that easy to do in a written format. And so, yeah, we found almost universally people are really actually keen and excited to talk about their research. Of course, they can talk about it in incredible nuance and detail that doesn't come across in the paper. There's someone who, you know, like Peter mentioned, Carney Trapp, like she didn't invent pediatric delirium, but she described it as a field. Like she is the true world expert. There's no one better in the world to speak to about pediatric delirium. And you come away from that going, wow, that's an incredibly thoughtful person about this particular topic that I see every day and didn't have a good handle on. And yeah, I found that really amazing.
The other thing that that comes across really well in podcasts that doesn't come across well in the actual manuscripts when you read the publications is some of the controversy and the decisions that you have to make along the way, either because reviewers want to attach to a point that may or may not have been your core priority, or you start out with a hypothesis and that was like five papers ago, and now I've kind of tripped and I've become a hemoptysis person, for example. And now this is kind of what I'm completely obsessed with because we don't know how to manage it, versus something like the sepsis criteria, which are obviously very much predefined, pre-specified, and a group of experts all coming together and changing the field with any luck. But I do think that when we talk to people about specific publications or how they chose or landed in an area of research, that actually is just as interesting as talking about any individual publication.
What I love about asking authors about their work is to really challenge them. You know, I mean, I've got no skin in this game. I haven't published these papers. I'm not an author, but I can just ask the really hard questions. You know, why did you do it this way? Wouldn't it have been better to do it that way? Because that's what everyone's thinking and wondering. And I can ask these questions. I've got knowledge about writing papers, but not this area which they've published on. But I can ask questions and challenge, and then they always have the answers because they've been through the process. It's great to be able to really dive deeply into the reasons why the paper and the research has been done that way.
And to hear someone ask the question that you yourself had when you were going through the stuff, you're like, why did we? And then to hear you guys ask it.
Rahul, what do you think is your secret sauce of PICU Doc On Call.
As I continue to develop PICU Doc On Call, the secret sauce, I think, is the fact that we focus on two things. Number one, making it very case-based and rooted in active learning. And number two, we really focus on diagnostic and management reasoning. Our overall goal and overarching goal is to try to make it as practical as possible at the bedside. And that's where we frequently put in to our episode some quick recalls, some summaries, as well as making sure that we even highlight things like dosages of medications or key consideration of some therapeutics that allows for someone to go from theory directly into practice.
Tell me a little bit more about your active learning that you describe.
This can be anything from some pauses in the podcast itself to allow listeners to really reflect on the data which may have been presented, all the way to a ping that a listener may get when we get a multiple choice question and want to reinforce things that not only do we see clinically, but are also high yield for the pediatric critical care board exam. I think that one key anecdote that has really made this active learning piece come to the surface is when a listener, it was a pediatric resident, came up to me and say, with your podcast, I'm always at the edge of my seat. And I kind of center myself that, hey, this seems like a true crime podcast where you're constantly wanting to understand what's going to happen at the end of the case. And so for me, I've really become somewhat of a med ed nerd, and a lot of medical education is setting that intention. And so that is exactly why we focus on things such as coupling active learning with visual infographics, which many of our podcasts have a visual infographic, kind of like a chalk talk that educators can use as well as listeners. And then we also try to build in a lot of redundancy, repetition, because we understand that many of the listeners are driving to work, or maybe they're going out for a run, or they're arranging their dishes in the dishwasher. And we really like to call out attention to certain key points. And all of these have hopefully worked to make the listeners enjoy an episode of PICU Doc On Call as well.
Well, amazing. I think this has been a really fun discussion. I have one last question for all of you. And, you know, I think it'd be really important for everybody to know, what are the PICU podcasters' favorite podcasts out there? So we're going to do a quick round robin. If you all can want to share a podcast that you really enjoying listening to right now. Greg, I'm going to ask you to go first, if that's all right.
I have to be slightly embarrassing. I just have zero time at the moment, so I'm not managing to listen to anything, but I do. But I just really enjoy editing mine. And I think I send Peter and the guests the same email after each one and say, you're all so brilliant and you're so clever. And it was just great listening to you 18 times again as I was editing. And I guess this is not saying that ours is the best by any means. Like, it's just, but it makes me feel like at least we're on the right track if I can enjoy listening to the conversation again and get something out of it.
That's awesome. Alice, what about you?
I was thinking about this. This is a deep cut, okay, because they don't make episodes anymore. You need to scroll back. But there's a former professor at Johns Hopkins, and they're both, I think, in Austin, Texas now. They make a podcast called The Effort Report, and it's just people chatting about academic medicine. And it makes me so excited about academic medicine. I love listening to it. So The Effort Report.
Fantastic. Elizabeth, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm going to go rogue and not be in the medical realm. I do love The Daily for my just dose of morning news. If I'm not feeling it and feeling like I need to disconnect with the world, I'm going to put on my musical theater hat and I listen to the Hamilcast. There you have it.
Fantastic. All right, PETA, how about yours?
I'm the worst, actually. I don't have a regular anything, but I do get email tables of contents and lists and things. And so I'm like so excited to be seeing you all on the screen, because I've clicked links and listened to each of you at different times. I am pretty regular with the SECM stuff and PCICS. But I'm more and more interested into things like the Effort Report and some more left of field thought provoking problem solving rather than specific medical podcasts. And so we could put together a list of those as well. But that's where I'm spending any time that I have, which is not a lot either.
Amazing. All right, Patrick, how about yours?
So the favorite episode of the Pickpod was done, I think, is a guy who's a computer scientist called Bert Hubert, who reverse engineered the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine and looked at the genetic code of the mRNA and worked out what each little codon did and why that was there. So loved that concept. As far as other podcasts go, I'm going to go non-medical. I love the 99% Invisible podcast, which is an architect who just talks about things which we see every day and don't realize. And that's a great thing to think about when I'm cycling to work and just the world around us. Love it.
Amazing. And Aaron, how about yours?
I'm going to go with Open Pediatrics, but I also just started listening to Dr. Death I Never Did Before. So that's been very intriguing.
Thank you. I'll send you your check in the mail later for that, Aaron. Much appreciated. Zach.
The podcast has got my attention right now the most is probably Not Otherwise Specified. It's actually sponsored by the New England Journal, and Lisa Rosenbaum is the host. But this current series is discussing a lot of the hot button topics in medical education. And I think I've had a lot to learn, and I bet many of our listeners will as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Zach. And you stole my thunder. That was the one that I have on my next playlist to listen to. In addition to that one, I do like the Papers podcast and the rebrand of that. I think it's really exciting for medical education. So Rahul, what's your favorite podcast?
I am a little bit of a podcast junkie. However, the two that come to mind right now are the Huberman Lab podcast, and Dr. Huberman is a Stanford-based scientist who really focuses on creating protocols for daily life to really optimize living and health. And then the second one, which I've actually started to listen with my wife, is On Purpose with Jay Shetty. And he focuses a lot on how to deal with certain interpersonal problems and just building stronger and deeper relationships in this age of distraction.
Well, I just wanted to stop and say thank you all for joining me today and allowing us to sort of hear a bit about everybody's philosophy and why you got started, what your goals are, sharing some of the wisdom, encouraging people to get started, explaining the joy that you get out of your professional podcasting. And I think hopefully our learners will have a whole bunch of new podcasts to go in and listen to. And so I just want to say thank you. And I look forward to our next episode where we'll dive a little bit deeper into the best practices of podcasts and really share some of the deep wisdom about both academic promotion related to podcasts, as well as best practices to inspire those that would like to do it on their own. Thank you, everyone, and until next time.
This has been a production of Open Pediatrics. You can find the resources and journal articles referenced in this podcast in the description. We have more podcasts like this one available everywhere you get your podcasts. Visit openpediatrics.org for more information.